Today, 11 a.m. I'm going to try to do that tomorrow as well. I've got a lot of work to get done. I am so far behind on my gardening this year, and things just keep disrupting the flow. And next weekend's too late to wait anyway, but the weekend's already full of family activities and weather events. So I'm going to try to get done a little bit earlier than typical for at least Monday and Tuesday this week. Tuesday we got, actually tomorrow is first Tuesday of the month. It's also April Fool's Day, ain't it? Yeah, I didn't even think of that. But it ain't a fool that John Willis and Nicole Sauce and I will be fooling around on April Fool's Day for the first Tuesday coffee chat. That's at 09:30. So I should have plenty of time tomorrow. And then Wednesday we will have a typical 12 p.m. start central time, that is, with Hakeem, who is the owner, founder, president, CEO, chief bottle washer over at Above Phone. He will be on Wednesday with us. Then we'll have, of course, you know, expert counsel Q&A show for the week on Thursday and regularly scheduled programming this week pretty much. Just a bit earlier in the day today. What are we going to talk about today? The entrepreneur mindset. This topic came up as like a bullet point in the last 3 or 4 weeks of shows a couple times. And I thought, you know, we haven't really dug into this in a while. And what I want to talk to you guys about today, though, is not entrepreneurship from simply the viewpoint of here's how you start a business, right? Or here are businesses you can start, or these are principles of businesses for business owners to use. Rather, I want to come at this from a mindset of entrepreneurship for everybody. Not everybody's going to be an entrepreneur. Some people are going to have a W-2 job their whole working life, and they like it that way. Some people are going to have a W-2 job their whole working life, but they have entrepreneurial things they do in addition to that. I'm trying to do this show for everybody, and we're going to start out today. We're going to break this into three sections. Section one is going to be the value of owning a business. If you are going to not be a business owner, but you're going to try to take entrepreneurial thinking into the workplace and use it to advance yourself, your personal brand, et cetera, then first you need to understand what an entrepreneur does. And I will tell you this as well. Being a employee who understands business will make you a better employee. Like if when I used to run companies, if every employee I had been an employee that did two things, one, made a conscious decision, I want to work for a company versus own a company. And two, understood what it takes to run a company, and that's why they made a decision, I might still have companies with employees in them today. Because most employees have absolutely no idea what it takes to run a business. They have no idea about business operations. Well, I was an operations manager. Did you pay the bills? No, then you don't really understand business operations. You really don't. You might understand it better than the person who, you know, sweeps the floor or holds a desk down, but you still really don't get it because you don't get what it is to sit up at night and think, am I going to make payroll this week? And if we're going to be short on payroll this week, am I going to be able to get a bridge loan like we did last time? Is that, I mean, the CFO told me we will, but I have doubts based on my conversation with the bank manager last time we had to do this, even though we paid it off even faster. Like, there's all kinds of shit you worry about when you run a company that you just don't care about when you're an employee, because what you don't know, you don't realize can hurt you. So I'm going to try to do this in a way that even if you're like 25 and you're going to work for another, you know, 35 years for somebody else, today's show will be beneficial. If you're looking to break free from that, today's show will be beneficial. And if you're already an entrepreneur, I hope today's show will be beneficial in helping you go to the next level. So that is what we're going to be talking about today. Before we do that, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day, number one today, KnifeKits.com, one of, if not the oldest survival podcast sponsor that is still with us. These guys go back to 2009, probably February of 2009 is when I first started bringing in sponsors. And I can't even remember who the first one was anymore because it was 16 years ago. But KnifeKits.com was one of the first, if not the first, maybe first three sponsors of this show. You got a company that's been sponsoring a podcast for 16 years. That is something in this day and age. It really is. They're a great company, and they deliver what they promise in their name. I mean, one of my business pieces of advice is do what you say and say what you do, right? Well, they say what they do. They provide knife kits. They also do Kydex for either knife sheaths or for holsters. They do blue guns so that you can mold your holsters for people that have a gun that you don't have. You name it, they've got it. Really cool stuff, too. Very cool pins and mosaics. Very cool material, mammoth tusk, buffalo horn, antelope bone. If you can think of it, they have it. But they also keep it simple, where if you are not some sort of master bladesmith and you're just starting out, you can get a kit, pick out some handle material, maybe pick up a book or a DVD to learn a little bit you need to learn to finish it and make your first knife. And then you take it there anywhere you want to. Some people make side hustles out of it. Some people make full-time businesses out of it. Check them out today at knifekits.com. Next up today, well, once you have money from running your own business, you need to invest it wisely. And if you want to do that, then I really advise you to listen to the Wealth Studying Podcast with John Pugliano. Talk about long-term. I've been working with John since 2010. That's a long time as well. That's 15 years. Amazing dude. Check out the Wealth Studying Podcast. He puts out about, I usually say weekly, but it's really more like three shows a month. When he has something to say, that's when he puts out a podcast. He had a really great episode that came out about a double bottom, I believe it was. Let me see. It was double stock market correction, double bottom. That was the one that he just put out. Definitely want to check that episode out. But subscribe to the Wealth Studying Podcast with John Pugliano. Again, the guy is a member of our community for real, not just because he hangs out with us. Like, he's one of us, like one of us, one of us. Guy reloads, ham radio operator. He's got the food storage down. You name it. He's ready to go. John Pugliano, plus great investment manager. Check him out today. Again, wealthstudying.com. Lion's Den says Safe Castle Royal. Yes, Safe Castle was the original. That was the first one. You're correct. And now I remember clearly. It was Safe Castle one day, and it was literally like 2 days later we added knife kits, because they kind of started right in like the same week. All right, let's get into this discussion on business ownership. I want to take you through like just five simple bullet points on what the advantages are to owning a business. People think it's always about being rich. I can tell you that if you end up with the same amount of money in the end, there's still tremendous advantages to be an entrepreneur. So you might keep more of your own money because of tax strategies and things like that as an entrepreneur. But if you had a job that you had to go to 40 hours a week and you have to ask if you can take a vacation, if you have to, you know, follow a dress code instead of looking like kind of like a mountain man like I do right now, if you have to get out of bed and go to an office that you don't want to go to because it's not yours, it's just where you work, if you have to deal with all the shit that comes with being an employee, and some jobs can be pretty good about that still, even those, if you own your own business, these advantages apply, even if you end up with the same take-home money at the end of the day, because it's not just about what you take home, it's about what you build. So one is that you control your income and your time. So if I decide that I'm not making enough money for whatever reason, because my income went down, because inflation went up, because I just want some more shit, then my take is really simple. I can just come up with another revenue model and plug it into my business. Like, oh, I don't know, a website called Home Food Systems that lets you learn about how to grow food, right? How to make compost, how to do cover cropping, etc. Now, I did that more as a mission-oriented thing, but it made me quite a bit of extra money. My accountant told me, you had to pay more taxes this year. And I said, that's because I made more money this year. And my expenses really didn't go up, other than where, you know, you can also control certain things by moving a lot of things into the expense side, which is the same as increasing your income. And here's what I mean by that. There is a whole bunch of shit. And the only reason I couldn't do more of it is because I already kind of maxed it out before I added another business unit. There's a whole bunch of shit in my life that's tax deductible that's not in yours. Plain and simple. I get on an airplane. I fly first class somewhere. It's a business trip. Anywhere I go is a business trip. Now, not every business can you say that about. Most businesses you can find a way to tie your trip into your business. That's just one example. Not every meal we eat out, obviously, but many of our meals out, 50% tax deductible. Now, those are tax strategies, and I'm going to go into that next. But that it also has a direct proportional result on having control over your income. So even if you'd be better off with a business, even with the same income, if you do want more income, you have immediate things you can do about it. As an employee, what can you do to raise your income? Ask for a raise. Maybe they'll give you 3% this year. Won't even keep up with inflation. If you go out and you start building another revenue unit in the company you work for, unless you have an agreement with them on some kind of rev share or something like that, or some kind of bonus structure, it doesn't matter. It doesn't help you. Like, you have to be really creative. We're talking about strategies where you can bring some of these elements into a job in a minute. I just want you to understand that, like, the business owner doesn't have to negotiate that. They don't have to discuss that. They just do it. They can add revenue units. They can raise prices. They can work harder. Simply working more equals more money for the business owner. The W-2 employee, if you get overtime, working harder equals more money. But unless you're actually channeling the effort into something behind your personal brand, it really doesn't. And even if you are, it takes time to build up that trust with an employer, where if I do something that works today, I start reaping the benefits from it tomorrow. The next is the tax advantages I was kind of hitting on right there. There's a lot of things I can do that if you are a straight W-2, you don't have even a side hustle, side business, whatever, you just can't. You just can't. This room that I sit in, this room's 100% dedicated to my business. This is my home office, okay? Across the hall is my wife's home office. It's also 100% dedicated to the business. If an IRS agent came into this room right now, I'd go, wow, you have a lot of clutter, but there's nothing in here I can see that makes this not an office. Same with my wife's office. So these are two fairly large rooms that go against the square footage of our entire house. My accountant then backfeeds things like homeowners insurance, electricity, property taxes, et cetera, because when we had the tax change under Trump 1.0, they doubled the standard deductions and took away the SALT exemption. So now that we're not putting like the interest and home, all that stuff's not going into itemizing and we're just doubling the standard deduction, it's all available to go into the cost of this room and that room. And that deduction alone is massive on the impact on how much tax I actually have to give the government. You're a W-2 employee. Everything I just said means absolutely nothing, even with the strategies I'm going to give you in a bit. That's another example. I mean, what if Texas all of a sudden decided, you know what, Jack, we're going to start taxing personal income in Texas. If you have a job in Texas and you're like, well, fuck that, I'm moving to Florida, you got to find another job. I just pick up my business and move to Florida. And since my business has no real heavy infrastructure, like I can literally pack up all the shit that I run my company from in like two boxes. That's how hard it is for me to move. I don't have any plans to do that, but at least I have the option. I also have options under how do I operate? Do I under an LLC? Do I operate under an S corp, a C corp? You don't get to choose that. All of those have different tax advantages. So there's a ton of things that I can do that a W-2 employee can't. I also have the ability to do something else, and that is to build long-term equity and brand. That's something we're going to talk about how the W-2 employee, if they're smart, can do to a degree as well. But you'll never do it to the degree that I do. I could at some point decide I don't want to do this anymore, and I probably could sell the TSP brand, catalog, all of it together for at least $500,000, at least. I don't know that I could get more for it than that. I think it's worth more than that, but is it worth more than that without me? You know, it is very much a person-centric business, but it has huge brand equity. I could right now go to doing two shows a week, and I guarantee you it would hit my revenue, and it would bring down my income because when I work harder, I make more money. But I could probably live a pretty decent life working 2 days a week for the rest of my life now, and I'm in my 50s. And when I say pretty decent, I mean, you know, 100 grand a year. Even 2 to 3 years after I took that step back. How many people can do that? A lot of people. They're all also entrepreneurs. It's all about how much you want. And then it's easier to pivot and adapt in uncertain times. Here's a perfect example. Anton from Anton's Land of Biltong. It didn't used to be Anton's Land of Biltong. It used to be Anton's Meat and Eats. It was a small local store in North Texas. And he specialized in groceries and things like that, which he still does, that are mainly from his home country of South Africa and various other imported products. And he was a very new business, which means when COVID hit, he was on that knife's edge where small business, personally owned, et cetera, people not going out, you could die real easy. COVID was killing the dying, is what I used to say during COVID. Anton went, you know what I know how to do? I know how to make biltong. You know what biltong is? It's shippable. And he went all in on the biltong, dry sausages and stuff, and then co-sold products like Mediterranean sea salt and other cool stuff from South Africa and from that whole area of the world into the United States by mail. That was a pivot. Now, if you worked for a company that shut down and didn't send you to work from home, you were screwed. You couldn't pivot. You had to go find another, you had to go beg somebody else for a job. That's an example there. There's been things that have happened over the years that I'm like, oh, I see an opportunity there. I'm going to move in that direction. Or people really don't talk about that anymore, so I'm not going to talk about that anymore because it doesn't seem like people are interested anymore. I'd have to get approval for that. And you get, as a business owner, you get real-time feedback almost instantly. As soon as you make the change, either it negatively impacts your bottom line. Oh, that was bad, but go put it back. It either is neutral, and then you go, well, is my life better, and yet nothing negative happened, or it goes positive. And you're able to make those swings and adaptations very nimbly and very quick, especially as a small business owner. But even as a large business owner, if it's really your business and you really have management control of the business, even if you have managers in place, when you say, Bill, Tom, and Debbie, you guys are going to do this shit this way from now on, Bill, Tom, and Debbie either do what you say or they get their resume together and go find another job and you promote somebody or hire somebody in that will listen to you. And you can swing that business in any direction you want, where if you work for a company, you have to hope the people running it steer the ship in the right direction. And that's the difference. You're the captain of the ship or you're a crew member of the ship. Those are very, very different positions to be in. And it can be designed to align with your lifestyle and your values. This is huge. Like, most people will tell you, I have to do things in my job that I just don't want to do. Sometimes it's because it's hard. You know, like, I have to go work and I have to work overtime on Wednesday and I have to work till 9 o'clock at night and I am not going to see my kids. Like, that's values come in there a little bit, but that's just like, I don't like doing this because it's hard, right? Or, you know, I did a job today where I had to shovel shit out of a hole or something. Like, I don't want to do it, but, you know, it's my job. But I also mean, there are people that have jobs that there are things they have to do, especially if you, like, work for the state and you're like, I don't want to do this. I guarantee you there's a lot of guys that work for, like, city code department and stuff like that. I don't want to do this. I don't want to write this guy a ticket because his fence is leaning 18 inches out instead of, you know, at 17, it would have been okay. At 18, he has to get a ticket. Obviously, he's on hard times. I don't want to write this. But if the next door neighbor, Karen, called into the code office and demanded it, then he goes and does that. But how many things like that are there? Like, I don't want to do this. This does not align with my values as a human being. But I have to do it because this is what my company or my organization does. And my boss told me to do it, and I want money, and I don't want to be poor, and I don't want to be foreclosed on my house, and I want to be able to pay the electric bill, and I want to be able to make my car payment, and not lose. So I have to do it. Where if you're running a business and it doesn't align with your values for whatever reason, even if your values are what changes, you can change the business model. Now, if you went a certain way for a certain amount of time, it may not be a quick pivot. You may have to transition the business over so you don't destroy your business in the process. But you can certainly move your business into your value system. But the best thing to do is define your value system before you build your business. And then there's no problem because you're just not going to do things that conflict with your values. You understand what I'm saying here, right? You're not going to do a thing that conflicts with your values when you are not required to, unless you become greedy and you chase money. But when you run your own business, you realize really quick there are ways to make the money without compromising the values. And some of those values are things that maybe you would never even think of until the situation arised. In other words, who is going to enforce a vaccine mandate on the two employees of the Survival Podcast, myself and my wife? Oh, absolutely fucking nobody. And had I had employees, had I had 100 employees, had I had, at one time I had multiple companies, and one of them I had 2,500 contractors and 50 employees. I guarantee if I had still been an owner in that company, there would have been no mandate, because my partner in that, Neil, he would have never done it. But if he tried to, we would have literally came to blows over it. Like, I'm not doing this. I would have literally put down a piece of paper and said, here, buy me out then. Buy me out, because I'm not going to be part of this. Like, you have control over things like that, including if you do build a business, large enough organization, has employees, you can then exercise your values in how you treat them, not just yourself. These are all things that are either very limited or absolutely unavailable to the W-2 employee. Now, I said I was going to help the W-2 employee today, right? And all I've done so far mostly is tell you all the shit that I can do that you can't, like, nah, look what I can do. Like, but that's not what I'm doing. What I really try to do is set, like, this understanding of how much advantage the entrepreneur has over the employee. And we do. We can control our income. We control our time. We control a lot of our tax structure that you do not control and never will. We can build equity and long-term value so that the business itself has value. And part of that is that when I get up on Saturday morning, there's a whole list of payments that came in on Saturday morning while I slept from Friday night to Saturday morning. Sunday it happens again. When I take a day off because I'm sick, because I'm miserable, because I just need a break, because I want a vacation, like because something broke, the income still comes in. Like, you can't just not work and expect the income to still come in, but you can walk off, or you can have your regular schedule and you earn money outside of your schedule. It's just something that doesn't happen when you're an employee. Like, when you go home on Saturday and you don't go to work, you don't make any money. If you are on vacation and you're being paid, it's part of your salary, right? If you take more than your vacation days for whatever reason and they let you do it, you don't earn money, right? So you can't really build equity in the business for yourself, but you can build equity in yourself. That's what we're about to pivot to. And you have no real ability to pivot or adapt to the market trends. Hopefully your ship captain will. And you don't really have the ability to design your life and your work to go together. Like, I love being home. I don't want to go anywhere. I get to stay here. I like to look at my window and see my friends, the ducks and the geese. They're right there right now. I'm looking at them, right? What if I decide I want to have time to work outside like I do today? I just start the show earlier today. Like, all this flexibility is what comes in, lifestyle and values both. So what can we do for the W-2 worker that wants an entrepreneurial mindset? Number one is you have to think like an owner. You have to think like an owner. You have to do what every employer wants you to do, and almost no employee ever does. Take full-on ownership in the job, the responsibility on behalf of the company. Where what most employees really do is whatever they need to do to keep the boss off their ass. Even the employee that comes in hard charging, working really hard, what happens is they end up, and I've seen this, I remember being a young man and getting a job and think, what a great opportunity. And it took like one or two lunch breaks with fellow employees to like completely derail the mindset as to this being a great opportunity. Unless you could sit and say to yourself, well, look at the people you're hearing from. Do they look like people that you'll work for or will work for you? That's how you make that switch. When you hear people talking that way, you just think to yourself, you think it's hard now, wait till you work for me. I mean, I remember telling the guy, I think I was like 22 years old, and I was running a job as a lead tech, and this one guy, he was probably in his 30s, and he said to me, man, if you keep running things like this, they're going to make you a supervisor. And I said, you better pray to God they don't make me a supervisor. And he said, why? I said, because you will work like you've never worked in your life. Now, it's already his lead tech, but there was a certain additional amount of force that could come behind that. And I was kind of making a joke, but on the other side of it, I wasn't. Like, I saw the career progression, and whether it was at this company or not, I knew what I needed to do to get enough clout from the job that either they would see that and move me on, or I would then be able to take that and go lateral and up. And that's one of my biggest pieces of advice for you guys that are W-2s. You have to take your job to the absolute limit of what you can do with it, from what you learn and you do and you can record and make metrics on and make claims about that are legitimate. And then you go to your company and you say, look, this is what I've done. I would like to move up. What's my path to move up? And if you get a song and dance or something, they're just nice about it and say, well, you know, I really do want a long-term career trajectory here. And maybe you guys can think about some things like, if there's any reason I can't move up soon, what is it that I need to do so that I can? And if you realize that the answer to that is it doesn't fucking matter what you do, then you start shopping yourself around. That's exactly how I got where I did in life. That's how I did more by the time I was 35 than most people do by the time they're 65. Just in a professional situation and with no college. That's how I did it. Because as soon as I knew, okay, there's a ceiling now. And I mean, I thought the ceiling was like a 1 year ceiling. I had to wait a year or two, but there was still progression going. Okay, then maybe I'll stick around. But if I don't see the progression, like 5 years from now, I'm still going to be doing the same shit. And you're going to give me a 3% raise per year. Well, fuck, I can make a couple phone calls, send out a couple resumes, talk to a headhunter, and I can go get a 40% raise and a position up tomorrow. Guess what I'm doing? That is entrepreneurial mindset. Because if you had a company, now you think about this again as a company owner. You have a company and you have a customer who takes up 50% of the time that your business is in operation, right? 50% of your manpower goes to servicing this one customer. And this customer is kind of a pain in the ass, right? Their money's green. That's what we used to say in sales. Their money's green, but they're really a pain in the ass to maintain as a customer. You have somebody come and offer you a contract. And they're going to pay you better. And you know the people that are involved in this company. You know all that pain in the ass shit you have to deal with this one company. You won't have to deal with over here. And for whatever reason, you cannot scale the business fast enough to take customer B and keep customer A at the same time. You're going to have to either take B and cut A and just basically fire a customer, or you're going to have to keep A and tell B no, and they're probably not coming back. What are you going to do? If you have any brains, you're going to fire off an email, notification, whatever, by your contract you have with that other customer and say, we have determined at this point it is no longer in your best interest for us to continue to service you. We give you, you know, 30 days, whatever it is, because you want to keep that decent, right? Because people talk to each other. And we are happy to do whatever we can to find a supplier or provider, you know, whatever, that would do a better job. But we're doing this. And you're probably not going to say we're basically firing you so we can take on a different customer. But you might even point out, like, we've had issues keeping you happy, and we don't think we're going to be able to continue to keep you happy. And so you have to go. That's what you would do. Why would you not do the same thing as an employee? I mean, I would have more loyalty to one of my customers, right? Honest to God, than my employees as a business owner. Because the customer pays the bill, and the employee can be replaced really easily. Now, don't take me wrong. Long-term, dedicated employee, like I'm talking about you being, okay, that's different. I'm talking about your average, everyday employee. The person that you hired, you didn't know him when you hired him. You don't really know him now. The way your boss probably looks at you, even if you're a good person, they're more loyal to the person paying the bill than the person that they pay. Because you are exchangeable. And if you don't like what I'm saying right now, but this is what you tuned in for today. This is what you tuned in, the harsh reality of this. You are replaceable. You are replaceable. You are replaceable. You are replaceable. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you bolt wheels on a car. I don't care if you lay down code. I don't care if you pack boxes. I don't care if you drive a truck. In the job market, you are a commodity, and there's even a known cost of your commodity. Unless you are exceptional, you are replaceable. And most people are not exceptional. If everybody was exceptional, then there would be no such thing as exceptional. It would be average. So unless you're a top 20% producer, performer, then you are immediately replaceable. If you're in that, you know, if you're below 20, I already fired you. So if you're in the performance variable of 20 to like 79%, you are replaceable like that. I know it doesn't feel good to hear that. I know you're thinking Jack's one of these rich asshole egotistical fucks. If you've listened for a while, you know that I'm not. I'm telling you, fundamentally, that is the reality, unless you think like an owner. If you are always thinking, how can I make this more efficient and more valuable? What can I do to be better at my job? And I'll tell you something else that you need to be doing. If you do not have anybody that is appraising your work with metrics of some sort, whether it's how many boxes you pack, how many miles you drive, how quickly you get certain things done, how many contacts you make, how many people that you put back if you're working a front office situation, I don't care what it is. If there is nobody tracking your metrics as to whether or not they're sufficient and are they improving, then you need to develop and track your own metrics. And I'll give you a bunch of reasons why, but one is if you're ever going to be a manager, then your job is to track the metrics. One of your jobs is to track the metrics of the people that work for you, and you need fucking experience doing it. In fact, even if somebody is doing it to you, you should come up with your own metrics beyond and above that and track them anyway. That way, you can say to yourself, self, am I really bringing more value to this company? Like, am I worth more money in June than I was in January? If the answer is no, you're not top 20%. And if you say, well, the company's not worth it, good. Now you're starting to think like a business owner is thinking, do I want to keep this employee or do I want to keep this customer, right? Do I want to keep them? I mean, they pay well, but there's other people that pay better and they're less work. Maybe I don't want this customer anymore. Maybe I don't want this job anymore. See, it's the mindset. And because at that point, when you know you're not going to get better because either you can't, there's no room for it, there's no opportunity for it, you've hit a ceiling, or because you just feel these people are not worth me doing this, then this is the path forward. You do it anyway. You shut the fuck up, you grow the fuck up, and you do it anyway. But while you're doing it, you're actively looking to go somewhere else. And you'll find it if you do the two things at the same time. If you are actively improving yourself, when you go interview for that next job, you're gonna sit in there and you are gonna have the best interview you've ever had with a potential employer, because you're gonna absolutely know that you're not talking smack, you're telling truth. And that confidence is the number one way that you get hired into a position that moves you over, up, and increases your income all at the same time. If you can't make that move, then why are you making the move? If all you're going to do is just work with different people, I mean, if you're working in a totally toxic shithole, that's different. But if all you're going to be is like, well, I'm just going to go from company A to company B and do the same job and make the same money, what are you doing it for? I mean, how many times you move does have an impact on what the next person thinks. But when they always see the move being up, that has a movement too. When people see lateral movements, you know what that means? You're the problem. Even if you're not. That's how I would think interviewing. You have four jobs. They're all basically the same. They're all the basic same level. They're all the basic same income. And now you're applying to me for one just like it. Yeah, I'm probably not hiring you. If I hire that person, I'm in deep shit and I got to have somebody this week. That's the only way I'm hiring that person. Again, I know some of this you won't like, but this is the truth. You need to focus on your results, not just your tasks. And you need to be recording and tracking your results. And I'm going to put the two together right now for you. Thinking like an owner and being more efficient and valuable and tracking your own metrics and also focusing on your results, not your tasks, and tracking your results. Now you do go talk about it like a raise, or you talk about like, hey, I understand that Bill's moving up and that leaves an opportunity for someone in my group to move into that position. Either that or you're going to hire from outside. I'd love to be the person in that position. I would like to sit down with you and have a meeting, sir, about why I am qualified for that position. And instead of walking in there and go, I work really hard, I do this and I diddly do, and I hardly ever pick my butthole while I'm at work, right? You walk in with a stack of metrics, paperwork, and tracking and say, let's talk about what I've done for this company. Let's talk about how I have proactively tracked my own progress to make sure that I'm doing a better job for you. when I started working here 2 years ago, you know, I was making, let's say, 30% efficiency on this, and now I'm making 80 or whatever it is, however you track those metrics. You know what they have not done at that point in their lives? 99% of managers, CEOs, directors, et cetera, the kind of people you would interview for that type of opportunity, they have never heard what you just said. They've never had an employee walk in with their own metrics beyond what the company keeps on them. And often the company doesn't keep shit on them. You know, quarterly reviews that never get done, annual reviews that get done only because the manager has to. They're all boilerplate. They all pretty much say the same thing. If there's a little couple negative things added on because the person is negative, or a little couple positive things that they can say, it's fine. But the meat of it's nothing. How many of you have been through that? Right? You get your annual employee review. It was just like the one before and the one before and the one before. How many of you have had to do them? And you're like, I don't even know this fucking guy. He doesn't cause me any trouble. I've never heard my name come out of my boss's mouth because this guy did something bad. We'll give him 8 stars out of 10 or whatever. Like, you don't really put the effort into it mostly, right? If you do, you're the kind of person I'm talking about. But most people don't. Most managers are so busy doing their job, they don't really have time to manage. They're doing like 4 people's jobs and yelling at you to do your job, and you just think they're an asshole. You have no idea what their job's like. So you have to start managing yourself, because that's what you do as an entrepreneur. And if you do that and focus on your results, not just your tasks, you already stand out from every other employee. And the reason is most employees focus only on their tasks. Doing your tasks is how you don't get fired. You show up on time, more or less. You're at your desk or wherever your workstation is when you're supposed to be there. And the things you're asked to do, you do. And then you go home at the end of the day. And there's nothing wrong with that if that's all you want to be. But then that's all you will ever be. No one's going to come to you and go, man, you know what? We have this new opportunity for a director in operations, and we think you're really cut out for it. That's not who gets that call. That's not who gets that request. If your ass is out the door with the mob, then you don't get that request. You'd be better off, as everybody leaves the office at 5, sitting at your desk playing a fucking clone of Atari Space Invaders for 15 minutes and walking out the door, than walking out the door at exactly when the bell rings. And again, if you're like, well, screw them, this company is not worth that 15 minutes of my life doing that. Okay, you know what? Then you need to be looking to go somewhere else, if you actually want to think like an entrepreneur. Because if they're not worth 15 minutes of, and I said play Space Invaders to make the point, it doesn't matter what you're doing. You could be getting things set up for tomorrow, whatever you do. I mean, I don't know what your job is, right? You could be actually working on something for yourself for 15 minutes. It doesn't matter. All the people in charge know is, you know, Bill didn't leave. Everybody left, and Bill was still here for like another 15 minutes. And if they do happen to notice that you're doing something for yourself, it's not even that big a deal, right? Because I'm off the clock. But if you're constantly seen as like one of the last people out the door, you're constantly seen as one of the first people to talk to when there's an opportunity. And again, if you're doing that and you're not getting that impact, either you're doing it wrong or you're in the wrong place, and it's time to start shopping around. Next, you need to build your own brand inside the company. It amazed me, you know, when I mentioned the one company had 50 people that were employees in that company, and somebody would say, you know, Tom over in coding or whatever, and I had to go, who's Tom? If it had been a couple of years that Tom's been there, and this is the first time I heard his name, like, what is it? I see, at that point, what I'm thinking, and you might think, well, as an owner, you should be, you know, like going and talking to everybody. That's not how ownership works in a company of that size, especially when there's 2 other companies and, again, 2,500 contractors in the mix. Like, how much should we pay this guy? What does he do? Now, it might be when they tell me everything, I'm like, oh, Tom sounds great. But I'm immediately like, what? But if they say Tom, and I'm like, oh, Tom so-and-so? Yeah. Oh, him? Yeah. Right? Like, that right there, like, the fact that I know your name. So you need to work hard to build an internal brand that when somebody hears Brooke or B. Hendricks or Dennis Allen or Humble Mechanic, right? Like, they're like, oh, him or her. And it's a positive view of your name. In other words, your company you work for works very hard, right, to make sure that if a person in the public hears the name of their company, hopefully they know the company, they have branding awareness, and then hopefully it's a positive brand presentation. So, you know, Bill's Tire and Wheel on the corner, Bill's been there forever. Even if you don't use them, like, you have a positive view of the brand. You need to be building that internally. But what's even more important than building your brand internally is building your brand, period, right? You need to talk to people outside of your company about what you do and how you do it. You need to find other people that are in your same space, and you need to talk to them and network with them, not necessarily because I'm looking for a job today. The way you get into the position where when you know you can't move up, you don't, I'm going to start looking for something. You're like, you know what? Within 2 weeks, I'm going to be turning my notice in. You don't say that, right? Because things can go wrong. But like internally, you're just able to know, like, I'm ready to do something else. Basically, you're thinking at it, like, I'm going to pick up a different contract. That's even though you're employed, that's how you look at it. I'm going to pick up a different contract. The way that you do that is that you have so many people that you've networked with, so many people aware of your ability, so many people aware of your track record, so many people aware of what you do, that this is what at least a few of them are thinking. Boy, I hope someday he becomes available. I hope we can get him to come work for us. I'm not going to ask right now because I don't think he'll do it. He seems really happy where he is, but if he's ever available, you want it so that even if the person you know can't directly immediately hire you, if they run to their boss and go, hey, Jack Spirko is freaking available. The guy goes, who the hell is Jack Spirko? I've known this guy for like 5 years. This is what he does. He's super well known. And I got the feeling the last time I talked to him that he's not exactly happy with where he's at right now because of something going on over at company XYZ. So is he available? I don't know. But I think it would be a good time to talk to him. Like, if you have people like that out there, then you literally can just change contracts. That's how you look at changing your job. It's changing your contract. You have a contract of employment with your employer. You both have certain obligations to that. And you at any point can decide, I don't want to work for you anymore because I'm not a slave, and go work for somebody else. And that is how you do it. You build that internal and external brand. Not bragging or anything, but in the telco space, telco sales marketing space, back before I left and came off to do this, there was a dozen companies that would have lined up if I had sent out an email to a few people and said, hey, do you know of anything? Like, the network would have kicked off and the offers would have came back in. And it was all about branding. It isn't that I was that good. I was good, but there were plenty of people that were as good as me, but they didn't have the brand. And that's the difference. Like, the employee that's dedicated, that really wants to be the person I'm talking about today, all they think about is being the best that they can be from a technical proficiency standpoint. I want to be the best that there is at what I do. And then you have like what I call the personal brand whores. All they care about is looking good, but they don't care about being good. The person that can do both, they're authentic and they're immediately recognizable. And the beauty is you can become that person. You just have to choose to and work at it. Next is you have to look for leverage. And that is skills, relationships, and systems. Especially systems that you can put in place for your employer. Or things that you can do for your employer that an employee maybe wouldn't. Back in the telco days, when I first started, I was a contractor for a company called ACS Data Line, and I was contracted to Lockheed Martin. And I was out there, and I was basically upgrading a 20,000-strand optical network. Strands, of course, have a connector at each end. That's 40,000 connectors. And this was something that had to be done slowly over time. We were converting. This is boring you guys, but from a thick net backbone to an optical backbone. That tells you how long ago it is. And we were using Siemens connectors, and I use epoxy that uses an UV light to cure. And each one, you put them in the thing to cure, and it takes a minute to cure. And then you had to do some other stuff and polish the connectors. Well, I found these connectors that used an epoxy that you could just basically put all the connectors on. And by the time you were done with, let's say, a 24-strand optical fiber, the first one is cured. And then all you do is snap the fibers off the way the ferrules were designed and polish them. And they polished in about half the time the Siemens did, and they cost a third. So they were about a 50% savings on labor and about a 70% savings on materials. I brought the rep in. Instead of just saying, hey, you guys should check this out, I actually talked to the rep from this company, set up the meeting between my boss and his two bosses for a demonstration of how it worked. And if I would have stayed on that job, Lockheed was going to hire me full time. I didn't think the opportunity was that great. I wanted to do other things. So I went into kind of the sales role in the outside plant world. But like, that's the type of initiative that I'm talking about. That's the type of initiative almost no employee would take. And you might be like, my boss would get mad at me. But see, I set it up, but I didn't set it up like, hey, Raleigh, these guys are going to be here on Thursday. What I said was, hey, Raleigh, look, here's how long this takes. Here's how much these materials cost. Here's the entire project projected over the next 2 years as I'm doing it. And here's what it looks like with these connectors. Instead of a 2-year project, it becomes basically a 1-year project. Because we're, even though it was faster man hours, it was still like certain things couldn't be done until they were ready. But we can get it done in a year instead of two. And the material cost on it can be cut down by, you know, 70%. And the rep for the company is interested in talking to you and demonstrating the equipment to you. Is there a good time for me to tell him to get in touch with you about doing that? And Rolf was like, wow, that's really, and he was actually skeptical. He's like, I got to look at it. Yeah. Just give them my number and tell them to call me. And then they actually set the meeting, but I locked the meeting down. And that meant that when I went out in the market, not only was my reference good, but when I'm trying to move into sales, which was my goal, and people are asking you for references, and you can give them a regional sales VP who says, man, this guy is sharp. This guy helped me find contracts. All of a sudden, you're opening doors that were otherwise closed. That's thinking like an entrepreneur in a job. And you can do that, right? You can do that, or you can choose to just keep going along to get along. You also have to invest like a business owner would. Look at your ROI on your time and money, but invest in yourself. I love when people are like, well, I went to my employer and I told them I wanted to take this class and they won't pay for it, so I'm not taking it. So here's what that means to me. You either were thinking, I'll get them to pay for this class so I can put down a credential, and it doesn't really help me that much or them that much, so damn it, I'm not going to pay for it. Or I was going to get out of work for a week or whatever it is. And I'm not saying, if you can get an employer to pay for class time, training, certification, absolutely take that opportunity. But if it's really worth what you say it's worth, if it really makes you more valuable, if it makes you more marketable, if it makes you more proficient, then invest in it for yourself. And maybe there's some you can't afford, but what can you afford? And how many things that are like, you could go take this class, or you could spend 2 weeks learning the skill without the class. See, the business owner's like, I don't have time to take a 2-week class. If it takes me a month to learn it, and I have to do it in my spare time, I'm going to do it anyway because I'm going to learn how to do this shit. The employee that'll do that, remember I said, be the last one out the door or one of the last ones out the door? If your job ends at 5 and you start training yourself on a job-related skill, and you spend an hour a day on that from 5 to 6, and you walk out the door at 6, and now I'm your manager, and I walk up to you, and I look at what you're doing, and I realize, like, you're off the clock, but that's not work. That's like you're watching YouTube videos or doing some kind of classwork or something. Like, hey, Bill, what are you doing? And you say, I just decided that this would be a good skill, and explain why for my job, and traffic is terrible at 5. And if I wait till 6, I drive straight home instead of sitting in traffic. So instead of sitting in traffic, driving home and then working on this there, I work on it here and then I drive home. Hey, you know what, Bill? Here's the key to the door so you can lock it on the way out, man. That's what you're getting from me. And that's what I got from another person I worked from, doing the exact same thing. I was learning a new software system that was coming into the company that wasn't there yet. And that's what I got was the key. One of the keys to the door is handed to me. Hey, you leave, you come and go when you want to. When you have a key to the door, you're just like one step away from your name on it. That's how you have to start thinking. Like, or if you're not trusted with a key to the door, what does that say about how much your employer trusts you? You know? Would you trust yourself with a key to the door? That's another thing. If you knew everything you knew, but you weren't you, Would you trust yourself with a key to the door? If not, make yourself into that person that you would. But you need to look at also just the ROI on time and money of what you're doing. Like, schedule your day like you're your own manager. Like, just because they told you you should do X first and B second doesn't mean that you should. As long as the reason they told you you need to do X first, if it needs to be done by 10 a.m., well, then you need to do that because there's an expectation there. But if you have that freedom of movement to rebalance your schedule and then record it all and then figure out the metrics and decide, like, this move that I thought would be beneficial, was it? If you can't justify it with you know, performance data, then put it back the way they gave it to you. They probably know what they're doing. You may be able to do it better, but you may not. But if you can justify it, then record that. And that goes in the stack of shit that you go have when you have your, you know, your reviews, when you have your promotion discussions, all of that, you bring that with you. I'm telling you right now, most employers have never had a person walk into an employee review that was actually prepared for the review, or walk in for a discussion about promotion who was actually prepared for it. That you could actually say, like, well, I'll be moving up to management of my department. How would you like it if the department was managed the way I've been managing myself here? Let's discuss this. No, they usually it's generic, random bullshit questions of people that are going to end up promoting the person that they feel best about or they like the best. Right? You know, a lot of times they'll go outside of the company because they don't even feel like they actually trust any of the people they have at that one level below to step into that role. That's why they go outside the company. They don't do it because they hate you. They do it because they do not have faith in you. If I can promote from within, you know what I can probably do? Promote that person and pay them less than going outside. When you hire a me from the outside, I'm gunning for money. Oh, you want me to come fix this shit? I can write this ship in about 18 months. It's going to cost you. And I won't apologize for it because I don't care if you don't make me the offer. I don't need it. That's a great place to be, is not needing the offer. Then they throw the offers at you. Then they start throwing money at you. You got to be nice. You can't be arrogant, but you got to be confident. And it comes from things like this. It also is the case that many of you who don't want to leave what you perceive as security of a job. And some of you, it's not even perceived security. It is, you have a pretty good job. You know, it's not that hard. It pays pretty good. You've got great benefits. If you started a business tomorrow and you had the exact same amount of income, you'd be in the hole after paying for things like your health insurance and stuff like that. And there's maybe certain, maybe you have a retirement. Maybe you have a certain time. If you stay there to that time, something like student loan forgiveness, because that actually exists in certain situations like teaching. Like if you're a teacher and you want student loans forgiveness, go teach at the schools that qualify. And in 5 years, they'll throw out your debt. If you're a doctor, go spend 6 years in the Army. They'll pay off your debt for you. If you're a lawyer, go spend 6 years in the Army. They'll make you a captain on day one, and they'll pay off your debt for you after a 6-year enlistment. There's ways. And there's, so I'm saying, there are different things that would make a person say, I don't want to quit this job. And maybe it's not a job that you want to do all of this with, that you want to keep working at being better at, right? It's a job you can do till you retire, or until your partner retires, or your partner's working on something that at a point you're going to move and you just want the job until then. And you don't really feel that they're worth working harder for. And you feel if you move to another company, it won't really improve your situation that much. You are perfect for, dun, 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 a side hustle. That's right, a part-time business, side hustle type enterprise. Something web-based maybe, content creation, developing products and marketing them through things like FBA, which is fulfilled by Amazon, reselling used products. I mean, there are so many things. Flipping product is so simple. I don't want to do it. It's more laborious than I want it to be, but not everybody's going to be a podcaster or a content creator. Side hustles are one of the best tools available today because what they do is all of a sudden you're an employee and a business owner. And a lot of the things that I said you can't do as an employee all of a sudden become available to you. Now, if you're exceeding the revenue in with expenses so that you're making no profit. You cannot do that for long. It becomes a hobby business and you end up having to pay tax on the income, right? But as we just had a discussion with Matt Sersley about on the Expert Counsel show last week, you can always underreport your expenses, but at least now you have expenses. You can certainly once or twice a month go have dinner with your spouse and write it off as a business expense. You can certainly find things you do in that business where the mileage is for the business and you can write the mileage off. Those are just two examples of that. So there are a lot of tax advantages that you don't have as a W-2 earner that as soon as you set up a side business, you do. Now, let me explain what I'm not saying. I think with what I've already said, this should be obvious, but this is such a prevalent myth that I need to say it here. I'm not saying you should have a business to lose money and use the business as a tax write-off. Because, again, you can't do it long-term. I mean, you can always decommission the business and commission a new business that basically does the same thing and reset the whole hobby business thing. That gets dancy after a while. There are these people called auditors. They do pay attention to stuff. That's a stupid thing to get nailed on, right? So the purpose of a business is to make a profit, or it's not a business, right? It's a failure. It has to make a profit or you're just spinning your wheels. And then the goal of the entrepreneur in conjunction with his CPA is to minimize the profit from a tax perspective, not to push it to zero. You want cash flow in your business and you want profit in your business because someday you may want to grow it and you may go ask for something like a small business loan. And if you don't have income, they're going to say, want, no, get out. Right. So I'm not saying that you have the business just to lose money. That's a stupid thing that poor people say about rich people because they don't know anything. It's willful ignorance. But there are a lot of expenses in your life that can be under the operations of a business. Certainly not all of them, but you too could be going to your CPA with the square footage measurements of two rooms and your house just with a side business. Just with a side business. And you might decide, I don't want to claim both rooms just yet. My income's not high enough. I'm not showing any profit. Because that's how big that deduction can be. And that's all that it takes. As long as you can confidently and clearly articulate how that square footage is used only for the operations of the business. And that just means that nothing else happens in there. Do you know how many people have rooms that they never step foot in their own freaking houses? Especially once kids move out and shit. So that's the space in the middle. The entrepreneur that also has a job. Now, the downside of that is your business will never become what it could become if you put 100% effort into it. But it's a great trial balloon. Do I really love this? Do I like this as much? Is it as profitable as I thought it could be? When I started this podcast, I did it for 18 months in my car, and I did it for 6 months. 6 months, and I knew I'm going to do this full time. I went to my partner, Neil, at the time, and I said, this is what I'm doing. I'll work to June. And then I'm going to walk away and this is what I'm going to do. And he didn't believe it at first. He didn't see how it was going to make enough money. He knew how much money he paid me, right? But I was clear with him. I was honest with him. I said, this is not taking away from what I do here. And he said, no, I see that. And so we came to an agreement. And about 2 weeks before I was supposed to quit, he came to me and said, I need your help. And the company with the 2,500 contractors I mentioned that I was a co-owner in, I was a small owner, 10% stake in it. He said, It's off the rails. I know you know it's off the rails. I know you've been saying it's off the rails. I know you've been trying to get me to fix it. I know you've been trying to get me to hire somebody to fix it. Will you take over as the COO of that? Give me 6 more months. And Neil did so much for me. It was like, yeah, I'll do it. So I had to go tell my wife, who had been waiting for me to move in, to stop working like a maniac, because like a full-time business and a full-time job at the same time is really what was going on at that point. Six more months. Give me 6 more months. And I did everything that I promised him I would do. I completely righted the ship. And then I said, time to go. And I offered a buyout that was very low relative to the equity I had in the companies. And he was good enough to do it. And he then at that point did go full court press, try to retain me. But I said no and walked away. But that was a train. That's exactly what the side hustle to full-time transition can look like. You will have to, during the meat of the transition, during the overlap, you will have to work harder than you've ever worked before. But when you break free of the old and you only have the new, at that point, you're a rock star with it. Because you've been doing it with the time you had available, and now all the time's available. And now you can dedicate yourself to it. It is a fantastic transitional model for many businesses. It doesn't work for everything. Like, if you're going to be a consultant, you can only do so much consulting, if you're any good, with a job. Like, that's a different world right there, because consultants generally have to work business hours, right? So, and being a good consultant requires caring more about your customer than they care about themselves, right? All right, now, I want to go to the last segment today on what I call general mindset shifts. And Humble's saying, listen to this, are you folks really listening to this, like, for reals? Do you know why he's saying that? Because I said all of these things long ago on this show, when Humble Mechanic was a Humble Mechanic working for a VW dealership. And I'm gonna ask if he'll say, you know, something like amen or whatever here. What I'm saying now is exactly what he did to get to where he is. And he hasn't worked for anybody for, what is it, dude? Like, probably close to 10 years now. He's had his own thing. That's exactly the path out if you want it without doing it abruptly. Here's what he said. And for those on the audio, I'll read it. 100% facts. So you've got, it's been almost 8 years. I knew it'd been a while. I knew it'd getting close to a decade, man. Congratulations. This is how you do this. Not everybody that tries it will, but nobody that doesn't try it will. You've got to take this shot if you want it. Now, let's move to general mindset shifts. And this is like the hardest thing. And it's the number one thing that actually prevents people from doing it. Whether it is staying an entrepreneur or staying an employee with an entrepreneur mindset or becoming a real entrepreneur, it is the mind shift that doesn't occur. It is not ability. It is not skill. Both of those can be developed. It's not intelligence. If you're a stupid person, you know you're stupid, right? So you know your limitations as a stupid person, unless you're super stupid, right? But the average person is just not that smart, but they're still, you know, midwit and down a little bit, right? That person knows their intellectual limitation, and you know what? Some of those people become billionaires because they follow a process, and they're smart enough to know what they don't know, and they hire people to do what they don't know how to do, right? So it's not skill. It's not intelligence. It is a work ethic, but it's also the mind that drives the effort. Like, anybody could get up and work out every morning, but not everybody does. What is the biggest, like, it's not genetics that makes somebody get up and work out every morning or work out 3 days a week. It's mindset. It's all it is. So the mindset shifts you need to get into this frame of existence is, number one, you have to move your mindset from security to opportunity. That's the first one. And some of us, there's just something in us that is this. This was always me, even before I could articulate it. When I was a teenager, this was me. Like, what do I get out of this? How much can I get out of this? How fast can I get it? But not at the expense of somebody else. Like, I'll give everything, but what? And okay, oh, this is better. There's more opportunity over here. I'm going to go do this. Oh, but you have a good job. That is a security mindset. Your job's good. They like you there. They'll never fire you. When you go do this other thing, you don't know if they're going to like you. You've never actually done this job before. It's related, but it's a different job you're going to step into. You don't know if you'll be good at it. You don't know if they'll like you. The people there might be assholes. You don't know. There could be a downturn in that industry. You either see security is what you value the most, or opportunity. When I took one of my first sales jobs, I remember telling my brother-in-law, who's very much a security-minded person. He's a cop. He's been a cop for over 30 years, right? Same department. Stays in his lane. He goes, well, you're gonna make more money. I said, well, if I'm good at it, I'll make a lot more money. But I'm gonna learn things that I'll never learn where I'm at. I'm gonna learn to go beyond walkthrough to takeoff. He didn't know what that meant. I had just learned so that I could do a good interview, right? Like, I'm going to learn how to estimate jobs. I'm going to learn how to sell jobs. I'm going to learn how to design jobs. And once I have that under my belt, I can go do whatever the fuck I want with it. Plus, I'm going to have sales on my resume, right? And he was still more on the, you know, thinking more about the security than the opportunity. I had no way to shut off the willingness to chase the opportunity. What I'm saying is, if that's not you, then you have to cultivate that. You have to make that mind shift. Where is the greater opportunity, or where is the greater security? And if you value security over opportunity, you're probably not going to do this. That's not terrible. That's not terrible. But it is what it is. And it will always fundamentally limit what you could achieve in your life. Because if you value security over opportunity, opportunities will be dropped in front of you, and you won't, not only will you turn them down, you will not even recognize the opportunity. The opportunity could show up and slap you in the mouth, and you'd be like, man, I wish I could get an opportunity. Everybody has more opportunities than they can take any given week, month, and year. I have more opportunities. I see all, I could do that. I could do that. And sometimes I even throw shit over at Tom, the web guy, right? Hey, we could do this. He's like, yeah, we could do that. I'm like, but if I do that, then I'm not doing this, right? And then you have to make that, which is the greater opportunity. And where you see this with people that want to be entrepreneurs but never really are, I have like five ideas and all of them could crush it. Which one do you think is the greatest opportunity, and which one do you have the most passion for? All of them. I'm out right there. I'm done with that person. Like, you're not ready yet. Your cup is too full of your own bullshit. I'm sorry. When you tell me that, what you're really saying is, I really don't know what I want to do. I want to intellectually masturbate with you, and I'm not into intellectually masturbating with other people. Not my thing. All right. Find somebody else. Next is, you have to switch your mindset from trading time for money to building systems that earn. Like, I never worry about when I'm, let's say when I'm developing a course, what am I making per hour while I'm doing it? Because the answer to that question, what am I making by the hour while I'm building the course, is zero. I'm making $0 an hour while I'm building a course. Now, I'm earning income, but not from the course. Like, I have made exactly $0 on my biochar course to date. And it's taking way longer than I planned for things I won't even get into. But I'm not making, but when I drop that course, it's evergreen. 5 years from now, that course will still sell and money will still come in. And the hourly rate will be obscene by the time you add up that period of time. That's entrepreneurial mindset. Am I building a system that earns money? T-Spaz earns money even if I take a week off. Because I've said, shop at T-Spaz whenever you shop online if you want to support the Survival Podcast like 18 gazillion times. Because it doesn't hurt you. My recommendations are solid, and you're going to buy something online anyway, and it's a good sales pitch. Because it's a good sales pitch, I have a certain segment in this audience that if they don't listen to the show for 2 weeks, they'll still do it because, well, I like Jack, and he's recommended. And they look around their house and go, well, he recommended this, you know. He recommended the meter block thermometer, and I use this to cook with all the time, and I like it. So then you're in their head. Now, that's not necessarily the way that you'll do it, but you need systems. A podcast is a system that operates. There's over 3,400 episodes of the podcast. People will be listening to this podcast long after I'm dead and going, who is this old dead guy? They'll still be, I told my wife, if I kick the bucket, you'll have money coming in, not as much, but you'll have money coming in for a decade. That's a systems-based business. This is something very hard for people to get their head around because they've lived by the hour and by the weekly paycheck or by the biweekly paycheck for so long, they can't think outside the box. If your boss said, here's what I've got for you, Bill. You come in 2 hours early every day and build this product. Well, what do I get paid? You don't get fucking nothing for it. But when it's done being built, the company will start selling it and will give you a contract for 20% of sales in perpetuity on the project. Now, unless it's like they wanted you to build some like gender neutral design software for transsexuals in Malaysia that doesn't make any sense. If you actually think it's going to sell and you say no to that, you're a dumbass. Because a year from now, you might be getting more in a monthly royalty check than you make in a year. But let's say the project is going to take you 6 months to do it. 6 months of getting up 2 hours early. I don't want to do it. I'm not making any money. That's how most people think. Well, I'm not doing it. Fuck him. I'm not getting paid. You know, halfway through it, they can take it away from me. If you're worried. Now, if you have a legitimate worry, like then you could say, you know what, Tom, I think that's a great idea. I would love to build that product for you. I need to know the timeline metrics and I need assurances that, you know, like halfway through it, you're not going to outsource it to India and take away my royalty. And even if you did at that point, since I did half the work, then it would be 10% versus 20%. Like whatever your issues are, you could solve with a contract, right? And there's other ways to push that stuff back into work, just backtracking for a minute. Like I know this guy and he's a really great project manager. He's also a really great salesperson. And so he has a dual income structure in his compensation plan. And, you know, there's a salary for the project management app, but any business that he brings in that he writes as a salesperson, even though he's not a salesperson, he's paid a commission just like a salesperson. Well, this guy also used to be an entrepreneur. So I'm like, take one of your corporations that still exists, set up an agreement with them that corporation is the sales agent, do corporate to corporate billing. They pay you your salary. They pay you your benefits because there's a reason this guy wants benefits. That's his business I won't get into. They pay you all your shit as an employee on your salary and all your bonuses for your project management on your salary. But all your sales go through, you know, Sales Inc. And those are corporate to corporate billings. And you own that company. And it doesn't cost them anything to do that with you. In fact, it costs them less because now they don't have to pay your SSI on that, which the guy blows the cap anyway. But it actually costs them less money because it's not employment payments. So it costs them less to make that payment to you. And it's completely clean. It's completely legal. And now you're back to being able to write off a bunch of shit you used to not be able to write off. Now, why would an employer say no to that? If an employer told me no to that, I'd go find another employer to work for. You know, because this is a guy that can throw about $12 million worth of business over the fence to them every year. Next, from consumption to creation. That is a different mindset as well. And it's less about what you're doing for an employer and more about what you're doing for yourself. In other words, most people think I earn X dollars a week. And with that X dollars a week, I can afford lifestyle B. I really would prefer lifestyle A. So I want to make more money so I can move up in my lifestyle. They don't think I can take the income and create something of value with it. Create something of growing, lasting value. Now, as an entrepreneur, that is things like a product set or a software product or a course or something, right? A patent on something, a trademark name. Like all of those things are types of creations. A business in of itself is a creation. Giving birth to a content creation business like a podcast, I've said before, it's like raising an infant. It just can't do anything without you at all in the beginning. And you have to breathe. It's worse than an infant. It's like a stillborn baby. You have to breathe life into it. And then you have to nurse it along and get it up to speed. And it's a long time before it makes the first crawl and a damn long time before it walks. But when it runs, now you're unstoppable. That's creation. So if all you do beyond spend the money that comes in is put X percent to your retirement, and that's it. I mean, again, it's not a terrible way to live, but what are you creating? What are you creating now? As there's ways to bridge these things. Are you creating a homestead? Are you creating food production systems? Right? Even if it's not an income-based system, are you developing enough skills in your life using some of your money to invest in yourself? To become more capable of doing things that save you money. Like every calorie of food you grow is a calorie of food you don't have to buy. Every calorie of fish and game that you put in your freezer is a calorie of protein you don't have to buy. You see what I'm saying? This creation thing can go more than one way. all that, but that's a big switch, is switching to the creation versus consumption mindset. In other words, what opportunity does this income create for me versus what things can it buy me? And then last is to move from dependence to self-reliance. Security, right? That's just a way to feel good about saying, I like to be dependent, right? I like to be dependent. That's what it really means. Like, because, well, I have this great job and they really like me there and they won't fire me. But you don't know that. You don't know that. And I'll tell you how much you don't know that. And you might think what I'm about to say doesn't apply to you, but if there was ever someone who thought they didn't have to worry about their job, is a federal bureaucratic employee. Doge. Doge. If Elon Musk and his Adderall-fueled youngsters can come into places like USAID and shut the whole freaking thing down, which despite all the wailing, fighting, and gnashing of teeth, this is what's happening. If people that thought, I don't even have to be good at my work, I can just sit here, I can just show up, I don't have to go to work, I can go to work once a week, and I will have a job for 30 years with a nice retirement and can be told, piss off, then that can happen to you. Security is an illusion for the employee. Security is an illusion for the employee. And security is an illusion from a standpoint of keeping your job as much as it is the company sticking around. In other words, there is this retarded illusion or delusion that people operate under that it could be summed up basically as companies have money. Companies do not have money. Customers have money. Customers spend money with companies, and that's how companies get money. And there's all kinds of ways that can go wrong. The market can shift and your captain could not correct the ship fast enough and the company can go bankrupt. The company could have somebody inside embezzling money. When I was in outside plant construction, the reason I left that and went over into sales directly, into data communication sales, was that the subcontractors that worked for me wanted to hunt me down and kill me because the guy that actually owned the company, because I didn't own shit, took off with about $500,000 worth of money he embezzled from his own company. And it was like, well, I can't stick around here. I got to go do something else, right? Like that's a reality that can go. You do not have security because you have a job. It just feels that way. What you actually have is dependence. That's what you actually have is dependence. Liz, Amy B., who I know well, has been in many live streams. She's sitting here right now in the live stream. And I like Amy and Amy likes me and we're all good, so don't take this the wrong way. But Amy B could decide right now, Jack Spirico, you're a big asshole, and I don't like you anymore, and I don't want anything to do with you. I'm going to cancel my MSB account, assuming she has one, and I'm never going to do business with you again, and I'm never going to tell anybody anything about you again, and I'm leaving. And I'd be like, don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out. I'm not dependent on Amy B. I'm not dependent on any of my sponsors. If I lose a sponsor, whatever. I have enough diversification in my income that no one party can actually dramatically affect my income, right? It doesn't exist. In fact, if like 30% of the audience got pissed off because they said something one day and all left, there'd be a little bit of a financial hit, but I don't really, like my lifestyle won't change. I'll just replace the income somewhere else. Like that's reality. That doesn't mean I don't value every single one of you. Don't take it that way. I'm just telling you from a standpoint of dependence, I don't have dependence. You do if you're an employee. I was the number one salesperson in the world for Fluke Networks, and they fired me after 3 years. Why? Because I was acquired through a buyout and put into a position when they didn't know what else to do with me. I did really good at it. It was the same job I was hired to do for the company they acquired. I did great at it, and then they had to downsize the company. It had nothing to do with my income. It had nothing to do with my revenue. It had nothing to do with my territory. It had nothing to do with my performance. They had to downsize the company. They had a guy that was in another position who could easily do my job, and that was one way to downsize. They'll just get rid of him, close this guy's department down, and move him over to Jack's. Why? Because he'd been there 20 years and I'd been three. Security? Security, right? Run a territory, 37 salespeople, do over $500 million in sales that year and lose your job. Don't tell me about security. It's not security. It's dependence. So if you want security, what you're really saying is you want dependence. Because here's what, you know what real security would be? Real security would be you're 50 years old. At best, you're going to live to be 100. I mean, that's a pipe dream. And then if you had $20 million, you could spend $200,000 a year for the rest of your life and never run out of money. That's security. A $200,000 income from a company that promises not to fire you is dog shit. It's up there with the check is in the mail and honey, I won't do something. That's how much bullshit it is, right? I'm sorry. It's the truth. You don't have security. You have dependence. So what do you shift to? Self-reliance. Self-reliance means exactly what it sounds like. I can rely on me. You build up enough personal brand. You build enough business brand. You build enough income streams. You build up enough things that if any one of them fails, it's a net. It's not linear. So if you have five streams of income and you lose one, you're like, oh, darn it. But while I have these other, like, I didn't have five when I started. I had one, then I had two, and then I had three, and then I had four, and then I added a fifth. And now the fifth one collapsed, or maybe it's the first one that collapsed, or maybe it's the second one that collapsed. It doesn't matter. One of them collapsed on you. Well, if I can build five, then I can just build another one, or I can, maybe that reason that one collapses, it was a dumb idea, and I just need to focus more on my primary. But you can replace the income. That's self-reliance. Who's going to fire you if you work for you? I'm not going to fire myself. You know what it takes for me to fire myself? I'll be honest. Every man has his price, and I don't know that my price is this high. But if somebody walked in and said, Jack, here's a $50 million check to turn Survival Podcast over to me right now. I don't know who that person is, but that's who you're going to hear on the next show. I would sell my company for $50 million like that fast. Why? Because I have complete self-reliance for the rest of my life and I can build everything I want to build without ever asking anybody for anything ever again. That's what it would take to do that for me. And that would be self-reliance, right? But how many of you, if somebody asked you to do anything and said they'll write you a check for quit your job for $1 million, you'd probably do it. You offered me $1 million for the show, right? Which is probably more than I could get for it, honestly. No, it's worth more than that to me. Like if I see myself doing it for another 10 years, it's worth more than that to me. And I do. So you see what I'm saying? That is that last mental shift. If you can make those mind shifts, security to opportunity, trading time for money to building systems that earn, from consumption to creation, and from dependence to self-reliance, even if you keep a job. Like I just talked about the self-reliance thing and said anybody can get fired. Your company can go under, whatever. If you've done the things that I'm talking about today as an employee, you don't care. Like I said, it's time to get a new contract. Like, honest to God, I have never lost a job in my life and been like, oh, man, I don't know what I'm going to do. I lost a job. Moved my whole family. The fluke one. We moved to Pennsylvania from here, right? Moved my family 1,500 miles. It's only been 3 years. Lost the job. Really good paying job. Well over $200,000 a year I was making. Lost a job and went, I'll figure out what we're going to do next. Sit down, have a glass of wine with my wife and say, so do we want to stay here or do we want to move back to Texas? Because when I start looking at what we're going to do next, I need to know. Are you worried? Not at all, honey. Not even a little bit. Didn't blink. Didn't care. Made a phone call to the recruiter that put me into the position that landed up there. And he said, where do you want to work and what do you want to do? That can be you. You build your brand. You build your brand in your company and in your industry. And your industry is beyond your company's industry. What do you do? What do you do, right? Like if you are a mechanic and you're in a business working on Volkswagens, the company's brand is Volkswagen. Your brand is Humble Mechanic. That's how you have to think, right? And your business is being a mechanic. Your business is cars. If you're a computer programmer and you work for Microsoft, your business isn't Microsoft. Your business is computer programming. If you're an IT professional and you work for Texas Instruments, your business is not Texas Instruments. Your business is information technology. If you're a bank teller, I don't know what you are, but you're not in the banking industry. You're basically customer service. It's not that hard to be a bank teller. It's not that much different than a lot of other jobs I've done with banks. I just pissed off a bunch of bank tellers. Sorry, it's true. You have to figure out, and if you struggle with that, then unless you're totally happy with your life, you need to work to move yourself to a place where you can say, I am in the business of fill in the blank, even if you're an employee. That's the only way you can get from dependence to self-reliance without actually owning a company of your own. Will people line up to talk to you because they heard you might be moving? That is when you get to that level, and you can do it very quickly. One of the things I would really recommend doing is get an old book by Tim Ferriss, The 4-Hour Workweek. But what to specifically focus on in that book, because some of it's a little bit of fluff, but he gives a formula in that book, and you can probably look it up and find it on his blog or something, for how to become known as an expert in a field in a month. I'm here to tell you it works. Follow that formula, and you will build that reputation and that brand, and you'll move from dependence to self-reliance, whether it's an entrepreneur or it's just a really kick-ass employee. All right, with that, let's go ahead and wrap things up. As I mentioned, like, one of the things I ask you guys to do to help support me is do your online shopping at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. You go there, and no matter what you buy, you help out the Survival Podcast. You can get on over to Vivor from there. You can get on over to Amazon from there. You can find pretty much anything you want at one of those two places. And you definitely want to check out today's item of the day. It's the Anker SoundCore Waterproof Bluetooth Speakers. These are on sale for 38% off today, 38% off, and they are a value at full price. They're a little speaker, you know, not very big, about the size of maybe four decks of cards put together, like 2x2 is about the size of it, I guess. Really rugged. My wife ran over one of mine with a Subaru, and it survived. It did eventually die, but it made it like 3 months after she ran over it. Its partner is still around. They buy a new partner for it because they pair. That's what the 2X means. So you can have two of them playing stereo for you. And once your device knows them, they just immediately link up with your device. I keep a set out in my shop. I listen to stuff on the small shop is where I have them, because the big shop I have like full AV. And then the ones that are in the small shop, when I'm working in the garden, I have these big towers I built for all the plants to climb up on. I set one on each corner of the garden, play my classic rock and my country music and what have you. And they're just fantastic. They're plenty loud. Now, if you're the kind of person that wants deep bass and boom, boom, and the windows rattling and shit, obviously these little speakers aren't going to do that. But when I've been sitting on like a porch or on a pool deck or something and talking to people, and you have the music up to like kind of where you listen to it, when you start having a conversation, you got to turn it down. So it's not like you're straining to hear things at all. I also listen to audiobooks and podcasts with them in the garden and what have you. Just great tool. And they're on sale today, I think, for like $27. So you can get a pair of them for like $56 today. $27.99, I think, $28. So $56 for a pair, I think, is what I calculated at. Check them out. But remember, no matter what you buy, you will help us out as long as you start your shopping at tspaz.com. Again, Amazon and Vivor there. And for those of you going to buy stuff on Vivor, I try to be really careful with my recommendations to you. If I've recommended a product, that's one thing. If I have not, Vivor has some products that are stellar. They have some that are okay, and they have some that are crap. And their customer service isn't great. So, you know, read reviews and things like that. But some of the stuff they have is really exceptional on value and quality. So cherry pick your stuff from there and use my discount code and get another 5 points off in addition to supporting the show by using our links. With that, I'll wrap things up. I appreciate everybody. Wait, I got one question. I did see one question on my one good eye, and I'll answer that before we go. Village 3 says, where do you draw the line on chatting with customers or clients on your side hustle? Not competing with the place you work, not taking away from your job. Ooh, you got to be really careful with that. I'll tell you, like, I have a friend who runs a website that does like tactical stuff and things like that. And he had an employee, and the employee went into the business of making Kydex holsters. And he wasn't even talking to the customers of the company. But it was seen as close enough that the person that owned the company ended up terminating the employee. I actually disagreed with him on that. I told him I disagree with him, and I think eventually he conceded that was probably a mistake. But his view was that person should have come to me with the idea, and we could have worked together on it. And the truth is, while I still think my friend was wrong for terminating the employee would have been better off because if the, because the employee had no marketing collateral at all. And had he went to my friend and said, this is what I want to do and I want a contract for it, you guys market it and I manufacture it and put it through you effectively as an online distributor, not only would he have not gotten fired, he would have sold a fuckload. And my friend would have seen that as very entrepreneurial and made him on some level a partner. So be really, really careful with that. And I understand the temptation is because you just, those are people you talk to all the time. I would say one thing to definitely hedge is never on company time should that conversation take place. That should be something that, if you happen to have other contacts with that person, then in my opinion, it's not your employer's business. Now, if it's a conflict, it's a direct competition. You work for an electrical company as an electrician, and this is a customer, and you're taking their business as an electrician that you should be taking through the company. No, just don't. Just run away from that, because that's the kind of shit that not only is it a bad idea, but if it happens, it will follow you and hurt you for a long time. Liberty Cat says, thoughts on MLMs? Very loaded question. I want the asshole hard truth. In general, just don't. It's too deep of a subject because I'm done, right, for the day. But in general, don't. And I did work with a particular network marketing company a long time ago. It was also in the telco space, long distance, cell phones and stuff like that. But it was basically just an affiliate marketing program, and you didn't have to pay money to join in. And that's where I think most of these MLMs are. What they're really about is all these people that are business owners are just customers in a stacked, nonsensical, irrational compensation program. And, we're going to go direct to the consumer, but instead of having two layers, like wholesale or retailer, we're going to have six. It doesn't make any sense. I'm sorry. It is a brilliant thing to be involved with if you own the company and you can get all those other people to tell people to tell people to tell people for you. I would tell you that especially today. Yeah, I'll give you a little bit on this before we go. If we go back to like 1990 and you talk about network marketing and you say a person with no business experience, no idea what they want to do, et cetera, I can see the appeal. You tie into a network, you have support, you have training, you get good sales training. That is one thing Robert Kiyosaki was right about, putting his one little line in Rich Dad Poor Dad. But let me tell you why that line went in Rich Dad Poor Dad. So the Quickstar Amway would recommend his book to their distribution network. That's the only reason he put it in there. But it was a true statement. So it was a smart statement for gain, okay? But I can see at that point in time, even early 2000, right? But look where we are now. We have people that make more money than doctors as YouTubers. I still think there's a dependency model there because YouTube can shut you down, but that's reality. Like, we have YouTube, we have Rumble, right? Those are like your two biggest video platforms, and a bunch of other ones. We've got X, we've got Facebook. You can put up your own website in a matter of minutes, honest to God, right? You can build anything on WordPress for a couple $1,000s, anything you want to run a business that makes sense for a starting business, you can have built. Like, there is no good reason to pay somebody $600 for a starter kit to buy vitamins from them in the future so that you can tell two people to do this. Just don't. All right. With that, maybe someday we'll do a longer discussion on these, but I'll tell you why I don't want to do it. I'm going to get people, but I'm in this, Jack. And if you did this, you could make a lot of money, and I probably could, but at the expense of my brand when it hurts people, because that's what it eventually always does. Take care, guys. I'll catch you tomorrow with John Willis and Nicole Sauce at 09:30 Central Daylight Time. And we'll have lots of good stuff to talk about. Are they going to bail you out or just run you around? They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. You don't have to be a
revolution.